Welcome to be in Sestri for this ninth edition of the Mises Seminar. Seminar organized with the main idea, the idea to gather here people from different countries interested in freedom, interested in property rights, interested in free market, and with the idea to give an opportunity to young scholars, generally PhD students, who can present their papers and discuss this paper with some professor and with the floor. Each year we have a huge number of applications, and it's very, very difficult to select the papers. And we have even a quite good record, in my opinion, because in the last years, many papers presented here in this room have been published by important journals and sometimes as part of books. And each year we have a general topic with the idea to have papers of different argument coming from history or law or economics, etc. In the past, we discussed about property rights or welfare state or free trade, etc. And this year we have a very special topic, in fact, because the topic is failure. And the title of this seminar is Failure, Why We Need It. Obviously, failure is something of negative, but it can be useful and necessary in the personal life and even in a society. And in one of the papers we will discuss in this weekend, the paper by Mathieu Bédard, that is a quite good expression, capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without hell, in fact. In the sense that we need the failure, and we need to discuss about the failure. I left, and now we have the presentation of the first paper, the paper by Caetana Leontieva. Caetana Leontieva has a bachelor degree in economics and international relations from Tufts University, and a master degree in religion studies in Vilnius University. And she's senior policy analyst at Lithuanian Free Market Institute, where she works in the areas of budget, taxes, and social security. And the discussant is a friend of us. It's not the first time he's here with us in Sestri. Professor Vito Tanzi, former director of the Fiscal Affairs Department, International Monetary Fund. Thank you for your presence here.
Thank you, Dia Carlo, and I would first like to thank Bruno Doni Institute for allowing me to present this paper here. My colleague and I, we were walking today around the beautiful town of Sestri Levante, and he remarked what a beautiful spot this would be for retirement. But it's an open-ended question if there will be a public pension scheme in Lithuania in 40 years when we will retire. And this, coincidentally, is the topic of my presentation today. So over the past century, state involvement in providing old age security has been expanding, yet the success in fulfilling the main goal has been faltering, and the prospects are quite poor. Of all the possible failures, this one would have some of the most crucial outcomes for the majority of population. So how should we define failure, and how are politicians coping with it? And should the public pension systems be allowed to fail? And may their failure be averted as such? So in the first part, I will review some of the characteristics and financial trends of old age social insurance. The first compulsory state social insurance scheme was introduced over 130 years ago. It was first a health insurance, and then it was soon expanded to accident insurance, and in 1889 there was an old age social insurance. So there are three main characteristics. The insured persons are employees, or they're employed. The system is financed via contributions, and the contributions are paid based on wages. In essence, it was a pay-as-you-go system where the contributions of the current working generation are used to finance the benefits of the current retirees in return for a promise that the future generation will pay their pensions. And at first, the contributions were around 6%, and the pensions were modest, and the retirement age was 70. But however, over the next century, the expenses expanded significantly, and here are some of the figures for Belgium, Finland, France, Germany, and Italy, and you can see how the social transfers grew from zero to around 20 or 30%. And here are some figures for the past three decades, and you can see there are some fluctuations. Yes, the numbers sometimes go down, but the trend is quite obvious that the spending has been rising. And here you can see how expensive these systems are. These are the figures for 2010, the implicit tax rate on labor, and social insurance contributions on average make up 2/3 of total tax rate on labor, which stands at 33%, so the social insurance contributions are 22%. Of course, in most cases, people do not see those contributions because they maintain that it is the employers who are paying. They do not see this as a part of their wage. So you see that there is a high tax burden, but even that is not enough. And a number of social security or social insurance funds have been running deficits. And here are figures for Germany and for France. Germany has been doing better, but France, its current debt of the social insurance fund is around 7% of GDP. So how do we define failure? In my paper, I chose three criteria. The first one is inability to provide the first and foremost goal of secure old age, of secure retirement. The second criteria is chronically unbalanced social insurance budgets, which lead to a breach of the pay-as-you-go principle. And the third criteria is an anticipation of future economic and demographic trends that will further worsen the financial imbalance of the funds. In this part, I will review some of the main flaws of social insurance. So first, is it insurance? Yes, it is insurance in name, but in essence, it's not a real insurance. Retirement of turning 60 or 65 years, it's not really a contingent event. I know exactly when I will retire. The contributions, they depend on earnings as well as politics. Political decisions are always mixed into that, not on risk. What is the risk that I will reach that age or will not reach it? So some countries, they also cap benefits. They do not cap contributions, which leads to a very progressive system. It's not a real insurance if they take your earnings, your contributions, based on all of your salary, but then when they calculate it, they say that, you know, we will have a cap of maximum, for example, 3 average salaries, and everything else that you paid over that, we will not take that into account. And the systemic risk that exists in the system, it is, if it was a private insurance company and it didn't calculate well, it would go bankrupt. Here, the risk is simply transferred onto current and onto future retirees who always have to foot the bill. So at the end of the day, neither the welfare function nor the insurance function are performed well. And the savings mechanism is the appropriate mechanism to prepare for old age. It's not insurance. Another flaw of these systems is that they're extremely vulnerable to any negative economic, demographic, or political changes. These are unfunded schemes, and they operate on the same principles as financial pyramids do. That's why Milton Friedman called them the biggest Ponzi scheme on earth. So their shortcomings of these systems begin to appear in the mature stage, which is exactly where we are right now, today. So economic changes, such as recessions or rising unemployment or emigration in some of the Eastern European states, this was very obvious. They mean lower revenues. Demographic changes, the projected old age dependency ratio for Europe as a whole, it is set to double from 26% in 2010 to 53%. So this calculates the ratio of people over 65 to the people in between 15 and 64. And the political influence means that if there are any populist decisions to raise pensions without any economic rationale, that will very quickly unbalance the overall system. And that is something that we have had in Lithuania. So as long as these are unfunded schemes and their spending is not limited by revenues, these systems are very easily transformed from pay-as-you-go to pay-as-you-borrow systems. And so in essence, it is not the current working generation that is financing the current retirees. It is the current children who are financing their own grandparents, their retirement. So just to mention quickly some of the other flaws, it's a compulsory system based on a flawed paternalist idea that in the absence of the state system, people would not be smart enough to pursue options for their retirement. And it is a compulsory system, so it really sets the pattern for people's lives. It puts very big limits on your liberty if you want to follow a different employment path, a different employment career, when you want to retire, when you do retire. If in a free market you would be able to decide that for yourself, here the state really puts very strong limitations on you. So these systems, they also lower the level of savings in an economy, and they leave people financially worse off. If people were to save, invest money for the retirement, based on historical experiences, they would get higher pensions. But in these public systems, people are being, in essence, robbed. These systems, they also distort morality, and they increase people's reliance on the state. People really depend on the state, and even if they think that the state cannot provide for them for their adequate retirement, they still think that maybe some good politician will come along and will promise them higher pensions and will hold true to that promise. So in this part, I will analyze if the failure of these systems may be averted. So first of all, are the systems failing? So a number of pay-as-you-go schemes have already transformed themselves into pay-as-you-borrow schemes. The ability to return the debt is questionable at best. If they're still running on current revenues and they do not reduce pensions, there really isn't any source of funds to return the debt. And people in general are becoming less and less secure about their retirement, and there is growing public distrust of the systems. So yes, the systems are failing. And the question is, if Madoff's scheme was allowed to fail, should the same be done with the public pension schemes? Should the politicians simply say that this is a financial pyramid and let them fail? Next, I examined three examples of three different countries. One was a failed system, another is a failing system, and the third is a system that is supposedly exited the public pension schemes. So the first is the case of the USSR. Of course, it's an example of a failure of the communist system as such and its inability to function in the absence of market prices. It is not just the failure of the social insurance schemes. But I think it is a very useful example to show what happens when a system fails and there is no environment and there is no preparation for the failure of a system. In USSR, there were very high replacement rates, which are ratios of pensions to the former salaries. And the rates were, in some cases, as high as 100%. So the pensions were the same as somebody's wage before he went into retirement. And almost overnight, in the early 90s, everything changed. The retirees' situation changed drastically. There was high inflation, their savings were wiped out, they vanished. And there was economic turmoil, there was shrinking contributions base, there was a big shadow economy, so the replacement rates became very low. And this serves as a warning on the poverty and the chronic insecurity and over-politicization of the system if a failure happens and alternative pillars do not exist and people have not prepared well. They do not have anything to fall back on. Next is the case of Lithuania, where I come from. This is an image from a PR booklet made by our state social insurance fund. This was done before 2008, and it says here Mama Sodra, which means Mother Social Security. And this was a book for children depicting how Social Security is always there to fall back on. See, it is this colorful umbrella that will always have your family members covered, be it maternity, be it sickness, or workplace accident, or old age. And this was true. We had a very generous system before 2008. We had maternity benefits paying up to 2 years of maternity leave, up to 100% of your former wage. And we had some suggestions in 2008 to extend the maternity benefits to 3 years. And that would be unheard of in most countries. But that did not happen, in part because the recession hit. When the recession hit, the umbrella, it turned out, is not so inclusive, and the buffer fund was used up. And as of 2009, our state social insurance fund has been running deficits that have been exceeding 2% of GDP. And the state social insurance fund had no debt in 2008. And today, this debt stands at 10.5% of GDP. And by the end of the year, it will stand at 12%. So in just 3.5 years or 4 years, the debt really increased. And the problem is, of course, the inflexibility of the system, that the revenues depend on today's situation and the spending depends on a situation that existed 20 or 30 years ago. And the ability to decrease spending has been further diminished by some of the decisions of our constitutional court, or like Supreme Court. It said that any pension reductions shall be temporary and they have to be fairly compensated. The court did not say the source of revenues to compensate the pension reductions. But it means that spending adjustments are very difficult to implement, that politicians will not want to do that in a recession, and more than that, there are also some judicial problems, because then retirees will take the state to court if they will say that the compensations were not fair, etc. A decade ago in Lithuania, we had pension reform where the social insurance contributions rate was decreased, and the difference was diverted into individual savings account, the so-called second pension pillar, that was supposed to alleviate the situation of social insurance fund in the coming decades. And when the politicians were trying to save the system, they cut those transfers from 5.5% to 3%, then to 2%, then most recently to 1.5% of an employee's wage. And a great irony in that is that the pro-market reform was done by social democrats who are quite left-wing, but the pro-market reform was destroyed by a center-right-wing coalition with liberal politicians in it. So that was one of the attempts to save the system from failure. It hasn't really helped because, as I mentioned, the deficits were still very high. Another attempt was raising the retirement age from 60 for women and 62.5 for men to 65 years in 2026. So there are numerous measures where the politicians are trying to prolong the existence of this failing system. The third example comes from Georgia, where differentiated pensions were replaced by flat rate payments in 1995. And there was supposed to be an insurance pension introduced in 2004, but it was rejected by the new government following the Rose Revolution. So on the face of it, Georgia looks like a country that exited a potentially a system that could potentially fail of social insurance. But in Georgia, there are no mandatory savings schemes, and their government has been opposing them, and there is high inflation, which in essence leave the state as pretty much the sole provider of financial old age provision. And since the state still pays pensions, even if it's from the state budget, the system continues to attract numerous populist proposals and solutions. And one of the solutions proposed is to introduce social insurance type pensions. So the system has not really been exited in its true sense of the word, and it can still fail. So I think this example is a reminder how difficult it is politically to exit the public pension system. And perhaps the only way of a true exit is if it collapses upon itself. So the system's existence may be prolonged in a number of ways, and politicians all across the world have been pursuing them in one way or another. So they can raise revenues by raising the rate of contributions, they can raise the retirement age, they can bring in more people, we had that in Lithuania, they can tax income that was previously exempt, they can have direct budget transfers, increase money supply, or borrow. And they can also lower spending by, at the same time, raising the retirement age, decreasing the caps on pensions, or decreasing the overall pensions, and then by pursuing other more opaque measures, such as changing indexation rules or making any technicalities that most people will not understand what happened, but they will see that pensions are not as high as they used to be. And all of these measures, they are painful to the people, to the participants of the system. So the system is there to help people, but in order to save the system, you have to sacrifice the people. That is what it comes down to. And another hardship with these measures is that, yes, they go in the right direction to raise revenues or to lower spending, but the situation always changes and they're almost never quite enough. So the issue of saving the pension system, it has to be returned to by politicians every 2 years or so. It is always on the menu. How do we save the pension system? So if politicians were to introduce a balanced budget rule where spending would have to automatically equal revenues, that would be a return to the true pay-as-you-go principle. And it, in a way, I think it would be attractive to politicians because it would mean that you do not have to return to the issue of saving the pension system every 2 years or so. And long gone would be the illusion that the state can provide adequate benefits. And this can even be a first step in a managed failure process. So instead of waiting for the system to collapse upon itself, you first make the spending equal to revenues, and then you slowly decrease the importance of the system. But in order for that to happen, it has to be a shrinking system. You do not bring in new people into the system, and you would move towards a more free market solution where people would provide for their retirement through employment, through savings, through other investment options, through their families, charities, communities, and mutual aid associations, fraternal societies, etc. But for that to happen, one generation has to concede and to make a sacrifice, has to say that, yes, we are willing to pay pensions of today's retirees and to save for our own pensions. We're willing to pay for their retirees in return for nothing, in return for an exit from the system that will fail in any case in the future. And it is difficult to get this consent from a generation. Everybody's hoping that the next generation will be the one that does it, this. Why concede today if you can push it on to somebody else? So if no generation steps forward to make this concession, probably another generation will simply emerge spontaneously. A generation that will have to sacrifice, and nobody will ask for its consent if the system begins to fail. So yes, it will happen, it will emerge spontaneously, but the results will be very painful because that generation will not have prepared for this failure. So that is the essence of my paper, and thank you.